From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Families can spread far and wide around the country, around the world these days. But every so often, for many, still comes that family reunion, the big get-together. Generations and wings of the family, often in summer, over fried chicken or Granny Wong's special tofu, reuniting. It's an event like no other. This hour on Point, we're looking at family reunions and what really happens there. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Does your family do reunions? Where? How big? And what's the real heart of the draw? What do reunions do that Facebook doesn't? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. At the website, you'll see some wonderful stories shared by families about their reunions and sharing those with us over the last couple days. Just terrific to see. Here's a little home video of a family reunion in Greencastle, Indiana last summer. Family members explaining what brought them to the event.
Well, I come to the family reunion because if you don't show up, they talk about you. So I want to make sure that they don't talk about me. Of course, if they talk about me, they leave somebody else alone.
I wouldn't miss it for the world. I have to have one foot in the grave and the other one on a banana peel to miss it.
Sound a little like David Sedaris there. And here, Uncle Harold speaks off YouTube here, welcoming the Darden family to their 2012 reunion.
Ooh, I wish Bob and Charlotte could be here and see this crowd. You know, the Lord said, go forth and multiply. The Dardens believed what he said.
The Dardens have gone forth and multiplied, and they are hardly alone in that. With us first today from Tuscaloosa, Alabama, is Pulitzer Prize-winning writer Rick Bragg, author of two memoirs, Ava's Man and All Over But the Shoutin'. He knows reunions. Rick Bragg, welcome back to On Point. Thank you so much for being with us today.
No, it's a pleasure.
Your family's done it. Give us a sense of the texture of a family reunion. I don't know if it's the Bragg family or some other name that we fly under many flags when it comes to family reunions, but what's yours? What's it been like?
Well, it depends on who's speaking to who as to which name we go under, I think. And yeah, we kind of talk about each other whether you're there or not, so it, right, it doesn't really matter. But I think it's pretty traditional. It's gigantic platters of deviled eggs and yeah, men and women standing around talking about things that are important, like work. And they talk about football, of course, and they talk about work. Mostly work here lately because that's on everyone's mind, and they lie gently, and they just look at each other's faces and listen to the accents, and they talk about people that are gone, and increasingly as I get older, they just remember.
Gently lie about what, Rick?
Oh, you know, they'll show a picture of a child, you know, and, you know, babies tend to all kind of look the same to me, you know, when they're brand new, and they'll coo about how lovely they are, and you know, someone will show up with a hairdo that, well, just it didn't quite work, and they'll all talk about how lovely that is, and it's gentle, and they're glad to see each other. And if they're not, they pretend they are.
Is part of it just to see how the sort of the many faces of the gene pool? I mean, in one family, after a few generations and you ripple out several layers of cousins, you can have all kinds of different kind of variations going on. I always found it fascinating to see.
Oh, absolutely. Like, for instance, I remember one family reunion when I was much younger. We had Michigan cousins who had gone off to Detroit to hang bumpers on Cadillac.
Yeah.
And, you know, they came home and they talked funny and their children talked funny and kind of looked a little funny. And one of them, a big old boy, didn't know he'd been gone away from home too long that pork chops came with bones and he ate several bones. That was a crisis. So, you know, we do change. But I think the comforting thing is maybe in seeing that we haven't changed at all.
You know, I don't know about in your case, and I don't know about lately, but when I was very young and reunions were very big, I always found it a kind of amazing time travel. There were people there who had been born in the 19th century, and you could feel different eras in the posture and manner of speaking and manners and interactions of the real senior set there.
Oh, absolutely. And that was the fascinating thing when I was, I think, 6 years old, and it's the thing that now that I'm 54 is, you know, to talk to an old man, maybe I should say older man, mm-hmm. who, you know, if his truck's electrical system wasn't firing right, he would have you turn the key while he held the coil wire in his hand.
Yes.
And if every hair on his arm stood straight up, then it was firing fine. And, you know, you learn how to sharpen a knife. You know, you learned what made a good dog. You learned, you know, how to chew tobacco, although I never did quite master that without turning green. And you heard things about wars and about tragedy. And, you know, if you went and sat with the women of my family, you learned about, you know, babies born and funerals preached and you learned.
Mm-hmm. I also found, I don't know in your case, but there was a lot of food history as well, sort of striations of, you know, almost archaeological. You get back to kinds of scallop potatoes or particular kinds of coleslaw that you just don't see anymore. But there they would be, back from the depths of time.
Yeah, we might need to cut this short after that. I mean, you know, the skillet fried chicken as opposed to the, you know, the fast food fried chicken that we're all used to now out of necessity, because we're not going to do without chicken. So,
right.
But, you know, the skillet fried chicken that was just dusted with flour and, you know, deviled eggs that did not come under, you know, a plastic dome.
Mm-hmm.
And we tended to have an awful lot of garden food because everyone had a garden, and mm-hmm. family reunions were always
sure.
in summer or,
mm-hmm.
or early fall. And you know, there would be field peas and pinto beans and green beans, what we call rattlesnake beans, you know, stewed squash, all in the same, you know, white ceramic bowls and Tupperware. And I don't think I've ever eaten so good again as then.
Rick Bragg, you always take us right to the heart of it, and we appreciate you just giving us a little of that poetry of the reunion today. Rick Bragg, author of Ava's Man and All Over But the Shoutin', always wonderful to have a minute to talk with you, Rick, and I'm grateful to you for being with us today.
No, it's a great pleasure.
Rick Bragg in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. With us right now from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, Edith Wagner, editor of Reunions Magazine. It's a publication for family, school, class, military, reunion organizers. Edith, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
That's a lot of different kinds of reunions there. What's the health of family reunions in this country today? Is it still as big a deal as it was? Are they falling off? How do you see it?
Well, I think that they're just as big as they once were. I really enjoyed Rick's description of his family reunions. And I think that exactly the same thing continues to happen with the generations talking to one another, with their enjoying all of the various kinds of food that that members of the family like. Members of the family look forward to coming just to get, you know, grandma's chocolate cake. I think that family reunions are organized differently because of some of the advantages we have, particularly with electronics and with the internet and the way families stay in touch with one another.
Mm-hmm.
But on Facebook, you can't have a hug, and you've got to go to the reunion for that.
What's at the heart of it, Edith? What's at the very heart? Is it to know our history? Is it to see ourselves compared to others similar of the breed, or what?
Yeah. In surveys that we've done consistently, and now just for family reunions, consistently, the response is that there are two reasons people go to primary reasons. There are lots of reasons, of course, mm-hmm. but the two primary reasons are, one, to stay connected, and two, so that the children can know where they came from.
Mm-hmm.
With the way families are living all over the country now, the reunion frequently is the only place that they have the opportunity to see one another. Once families start, you know, the kids start going off and getting married and moving to wherever they're going to end up living, The cousins don't get to see one another as much as they once did. And so the reunion becomes the place where they do it. In fact, they can't even once you're gone, most of us have experienced this in our own families. You're not all going to even get together for Christmas or even for Thanksgiving because people have other obligations. I go regularly to a reunion here in Wisconsin, that has celebrated, 150 years in America, and they just celebrated their 80th reunion a couple of weeks ago. The Seideman family, there were almost 400 people there.
Wow.
And they came from 14 states and Germany and Canada.
Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We're talking this hour about family reunions. Sound of Singing from the 2009 Lee Kaysen family reunion right there in Elmendorf, Texas. You can join us this hour. Are you a big family reunion family or not? Does it seem antique, something from another era, like something you see in old albums? Or is it somehow more important than ever, even in the era when we've all got Facebook and social networks right and left? We've been joined from Milwaukee by Edith Wagner. She's editor of Reunions Magazine. We're going to have more voices in just a moment here, but here's a couple right here. This is a little bit of event planning from Party Pop, an event planning site, released a how-to video online for organizing a family reunion.
It's been a long time since you've seen Uncle Harold, hasn't it? Heck, you've never even met all the cousins on Aunt Lulu's side of the family. And Grandpa just turned 90. Might be time to organize a family reunion. The first thing you'll start working on is the list. Now, this will be your go-to document. All the family members you want to invite, including spouses and children. Make it extra special by reaching out to family you've never even met before. Work the phones, Facebook, any resource you can to get contact information.
All whoopy-doopy there from Party Pop, and maybe that works, but it's not always perfect. Here's an episode from NBC's Saturday Night Live, 2009. Christopher Walken hosts his own family reunion.
Here's your drink, and enjoy the reunion.
Thank you.
Christopher, I can't believe you made it.
Stanley, how's by you? Long time no see.
Hey,
big hug.
Hey. Huh? Big hug.
Big hug. When's the last time I saw you, Stanley?
It's my brother John's wedding 15 years ago.
That wedding was so nuts.
Speak of the devil, that's John.
Hey, Christopher. You remember my kids, Maxine and Scott?
Yes, it can be a little stilted and a little weird sometimes. But that comes with family. Christopher Walken there on Saturday Night Live. Edith Wagner, editor of Reunions Magazine, is with us from Milwaukee. With us as well right now from Audubon, Pennsylvania, Ayon Vargas, founder and institute administrator of the Family Reunion Institute at Temple University. Ayon Vargas, thank you very much for joining us.
Hello, Tom. Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
It's great to have you.
These stories.
who knew there was such a thing? What do you study at the Family Reunion Institute at Temple?
Well, it's not as much of a study as it is a service. We try to encourage families to have reunions and to carry on meaningful activities. Our primary focus has been on African-American families, and that's because I am one, I guess.
Right.
But also, we've found over the years that other families of all kinds of ethnic groups, can benefit from what we teach and what other families do.
What have you found about the popularity of family reunions? How many families do them? I'm looking at here's a thesis out of Purdue University. Again, who knew there was so much on reunions? But they found, big survey, found reunion frequency in different families can range from every like twice a year to maybe once every 10 years or more. They found over half of families that have reunions do it once a year. 31% every couple years, every 26% longer than that. What's the frequency and popularity that you see, Ayon?
Well, I think that that shows that there is a great variety among families in terms of when and all of that. My focus has really been on the importance of the family reunion and the benefits of the family reunion, and we've held 17 conferences in which we look at kinds of things that families can do at their reunions. Not only the kinds, but we have a very serious purpose. For us African Americans, family reunions are really a serious business. It's not
why more so maybe
around for... talking mm-hmm. because the extended family, which is what we're talking about, is played an exceptionally important role in the lives of African Americans, particularly as they migrated from the South to the North.
Mm-hmm.
And over the years, the reunions, not the reunions, but that kind of an extended family that lived all in the same neighborhood, where you knew all your aunts and relatives, and you called your just friends, you called them aunt and uncle. That's how meaningful it was. That began to diminish, and that's also true, of course, of immigrant families. But we wanted to particularly focus on the African American family because it was so meaningful, and it was something that we were losing. And so when families began to really get together again, because of the scattering that had happened,
mm-hmm.
people, I call it, quotes, progress, folks began to move away from the community, et cetera, then when they began to reunite, I was very excited about that and began to doing the research on the benefits of family reunions.
Let me ask, I want to hear so much more on that, and I'm so glad you're with us, Ayon. Edith, how do you define a family reunion? What makes it a family reunion rather than just a get-together of some family members?
Boy, that's a good question. It is a get-together of family members, but most family reunions have organized activities and have programs that are designed around the interests and what their family members want to do. So that now more and more reunions are becoming three-day events from Friday through Sunday. And families have a variety of almost any kind of activities that you could do on vacation that family reunions can do if that many people can do them. So,
Does it have to be extended? I mean, do you have to get out into cousins and second cousins and third cousins to make it a family reunion?
Not necessarily. A family reunion could easily be mom and dad and their kids and their grandkids. It could be three generations. And, you know, going on vacation and having, you know, planning things. It's not family reunions. Well, family reunions do happen like this, but they aren't really the ones that succeed very long, where they just simply get together and then everybody is on their own to do whatever they want.
That's a different definition of family reunion than the one I grew up with. I mean, we'd have the nuclear family and maybe with grandparents get together and do things, but it's different for everybody. But in my family, when it was family reunion, you had people there from so many wings of the family that you might not even know everyone.
Yes, well, that's of course part of the reason for having the reunion to begin with, is to get to know who you are and what has happened in your family, and to get the stories and the histories of your family. And, you know, but that's why I was saying we don't usually sit around and just talk and have it's really almost like serious business, but at the same time, a lot of fun. And, you know, we may interact with each other through the workshops that we might hold, or games, and there are so many ways to to show the history, to, you know, through from plays to, you know, the charts and the trees. Used to be the way, you know, except many years ago, nowadays.
Showing the family tree, putting it up on a big chart, find your place on it, you mean, yeah.
Exactly. That used to be it, but at least with African-American families, we've gone well beyond that. We may do plays, we may have fashion shows that where you dress like people used to dress.
Wow.
Cookbooks and calendars, lots of artifacts, and of course, so all of this is related to then showing how, you know, what is your history. And all of this helps then in the sense of identity that younger people get about themselves.
Our friend Isabel Wilkerson reminding us this time of year, if you're in the airport in Atlanta, you might see crowds of people in wearing the same T-shirt, and there goes that family or that family again.
That's right. That is exactly so.
Let me get a call from Georgia, Fort Benning, Georgia. Andrew's calling. Hi, Andrew. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to say that I thought this was a really interesting conversation because I grew up in a family that was not very keen on reunions or anything like that. Like, we had very formal, like, family reunions yearly, but they weren't really stressed or how many people actually came to them.
Yeah.
But here just a couple years ago when I married into my wife's family, I could see kind of the opposite side and the difference in the family dynamic of a family that gets together from all over the world, from all over the United States and Kuwait and Indonesia.
Wow.
Excuse me.
And what does it do for you, Andrew? Have you come around to your wife's family reunion style? Do you like it?
Oh, very much so. It's so much more to see the extended family and you know, four generations or more come together and get to see, you know, so many different, again, for people all over the world, you get to see different backgrounds from these people who are related and yet so different. And the most recent gathering they did was for the 4th of July and getting to see a lot of focus there for the different veterans in the family. You know, they had made sure that myself as an Iraq War veteran got to speak to one of her uncles who are great uncles who I hadn't met yet before this gathering, who was a Korean War Navy veteran, and getting to sit down to see, again, something so different and so similar. That my family growing up, you would never have seen that.
Andrew, I'm so glad you share that story. You can hear right in that anecdote the kind of special intimacy of a family reunion, in your case, that lets veterans from two very different wars and eras talk in a way they might not otherwise. Let me get one more right here. Joanne calling from Washington, D.C. Joanne, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hello, Tom.
Hi. What's your story?
My story is I have just a small family. There were four of us kids, and 10 years ago when my mom died, we put the money from her selling her house into a fund, and every year since then, we have gotten together as a family. And sometimes it's just for a three-day weekend in Milwaukee, and we've gone to Italy, and this year we're on our way to Maine.
What a great idea. What a way to honor your mother. I'm sure that keeps kind of family closeness there that might be difficult otherwise, Joanne.
Yeah, you know, we really would not get together except for, you know, graduations, weddings, and funerals if it wasn't for this intention of doing it every year.
That's a great memorial to your mom. Joanne, I appreciate your call as well. Aon Vargas, Edith Wagner, we asked our listeners to share their family reunion stories with us, and we got a lot of wonderful responses on that front. I mean, here's one talking about how there's usually somebody in the family that drives this togetherness. In Joanne's case, you know, it's a decision made after her mom's death, but here's one of our listeners talks about the Schifori family reunion, where the maternal grandmother, Othella, was the real driving force behind the big extended family getting together. They've got chapters, you know, sort of wings in Oklahoma and Arkansas and Michigan. She made it happen. Aon, do you find that there's often one person or a pod within the family that really keeps it going?
Yes, there usually is, and very often these reunions did used to emanate from going to the family to a funeral and being so happy to see everybody there, but not under the circumstances. And then they say, well, let's get together. And so then someone takes that on and organizes it, and several people. And you find that quite often. The issue that comes out of that, however, eventually those persons are not either able to continue because they're getting older, and then, you know, you want to pass it on to mm-hmm. younger members of the family, and younger meaning, you know, like people in their 40s and 50s even, so it's the succession that we now worry more about, because of the people who may have organized it to begin with just can't always carry it on after.
In your experience, what are the most important kind of stories that get told at family reunions? You can chat about lots of things, and maybe the chatting is the thing in itself, but what do you see as the most important things that get transmitted?
Well, I think one of the most important things is that sense of identity that comes through telling the history. And that's why, as I said, you can tell the history in so many different ways, but that is very important. It gives us a real sense of identity, particularly to younger people, and that's very important. I think the other kind of thing that we really like to see is really on the passing on of important values, at least values that are important to that family and to African Americans, you know, respect for elders, a variety of things that go on, mainly through many family reunions have a speaker at their reunion, and a lot of that speech is about how you treat other people, what parents mm-hmm. should do, mm-hmm. The love and the support that the reunion can give to others. Those are the kinds of values that get processed at least at an African American family reunion, and that's why I say that we really don't sit around doing a lot of talking. Maybe on the night of the first night we come in with the hospitality, but after that, there are just a whole variety of activities that are fun, but also may have some, you know, specific benefit. Even teaching old games to the kids, you know, things that they don't even know about anymore. That's kind of fun, too.
You know, in all kinds of ethnic groups these days, marriage itself is falling off in popularity. What do you think that portends for family reunions down the road, Ayon, if fewer Americans are getting married, even when they have families?
I think what happens is that, of course, those persons also come to family reunions. Mm-hmm. I mean, once
you're still in.
Yeah, exactly, you know, and we have, so now we see a greater mixture at the family reunions and more diversity, which I love personally, but people, you know, they still come. They come because they become attached. Another thing you see sometimes at family reunions, which I think is always very interesting, even divorced couples may come, so that one of the spouses may have gotten, they are divorced, one of them may have been remarried, brings that wife, but the divorced wife is still there because now she's become a part of that family.
A chance to bring it all together, Ayon Vargas at the Family Reunion Institute at Temple University. Thank you so much for joining us, Ayon.
Oh, my pleasure.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about family reunions, who has them, how they work, and what they do. Edith Wagner is with us, editor of Reunions Magazine, quarterly publication on all kinds of reunions, including family, author of the Family Reunion Source Book. We've got all kinds of interesting response here, people telling deep, long stories about their family reunions at our website. I hope you'll check those out. And at our Facebook page as well, On Point Radio. Lots of people, Edith, coming in here with their comments. Samantha says, our reunion is only my 10 aunts and uncles, their kids, grandkids. That gets to be a pretty big number. She says, we call it the Big Eat. Everyone is a loudmouth Cajun cook. Toyota Wright said, we just had a family reunion 2 weekends ago. It was my grand family. That would be grandparents, aunts, uncles, kind of that breadth. Toyota, to the point we were on there just before the break, Edith says, I don't know how long these reunions can continue. There are now only 2 members of the remaining grand family, sort of at that, I guess. Reunions have gotten so large at times I don't feel like it's family anymore, but a convention. But plenty still going on. Here's a tweet that just came in from Hannah. Says, just the grandkids and great-grandkids at our family reunion this summer. And it looks, I don't know, there's 30 or 40 people in this picture. Numbers say they can go all the way up to hundreds, some of them even thousands at the really grand scale. And you say, Edith, they're getting more elaborate. I mean, the ones that I attended as a boy were tended to be one day, but I know what you mean. They become destination things sometimes, often the entire weekend, not just an afternoon, but real big whoop-de-doos.
Oh, yes, yes. And usually those whoop-de-doos are headlined by a banquet, and the banquet frequently is formal.
Formal? What do you mean by that? I can't even begin to picture that.
Well,
formal?
People really get dressed up.
Okay.
It's an opportunity to wear things that you don't get to wear every day and to show off. I mean, there's certainly within families, there is a certain amount of wanting to show off.
Sure, sure.
There's so many things that families do. They're not just – you went to picnics. Rick Bragg went to picnics. And certainly a picnic is a very essential part of most reunions. It's part of when kids let off steam.
Mm-hmm.
But a typical reunion now, the 3-day reunions are, they start on either Thursday or Friday. On Friday, they'll have what they call a meet and greet on Friday. Frequently it's a fish fry. That sounds, you know, typical. And then on Saturday, they have a whole variety of activities planned. And the activities can be going to sports or doing sports themselves. Earlier, Ione talked about workshops. Many families will share their own expertise with their family members. Say, for example, there's a family member who's a nurse and wants to talk about hereditary diseases, or someone who does financial planning and wants to share that information with their family members. Lots of families have their own family Olympics, which are not very serious, but are certainly lots and lots of fun. And all this stuff happens during the day on Saturday. Also, these same kinds of family reunions often have a formal meeting. And the formal meeting can be lots of things, but oftentimes that's when they decide where the next reunion or the reunion after that is going to be held, where they make their decision there, where everybody knows then that this is when we're getting together next. Put it on your calendar. Don't schedule a wedding.
Right.
Don't schedule a graduation.
Right.
Obviously, we can't help it with funerals.
Hold the date.
Nor with births. Yeah. Right. Exactly. You hold that date.
Yeah.
Some families do it on the same day every year. But, you know, there are different ways of coming by the date, but the date is probably the most essential thing if you want to go all the way to the back to the very beginning. Then Saturday night usually is a banquet or some kind of a formal, and by formal, I don't necessarily mean dress formal, but yes, many of them do that too. And then there's always a program and frequently, a disc jockey or music after, and, you know, a certain number of the people will stick around and dance. Then Sunday typically is a worship service, and that can be either, you know, if the family is all the same religion, they can go to the family church where the reunion is, or they can have their own service where different family members participate in the actual service. Sometimes the family picnic is on Sunday instead of Saturday. It depends on how long those reunions are going to be extended. But I see now families are doing where they're coming on Thursday and leaving on Monday.
Wow.
So you're not caught up in the weekend traffic.
Yeah, but that's a big time commitment and really settling into it. This has evolved into a more elaborate kind of a program than I was accustomed to.
And that's not unusual.
Yeah.
That's not at all unusual.
Let me get a call right here from Franklin, Tennessee. Sheila's calling. Hi, Sheila, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Very well. What do you know of family reunions?
Well, we just had our family reunion on Sunday at Red Cross, Kentucky, at my great-grandparents' house that turned 100 years old this year. And my brother owns the property, and the last Sunday in July of every year, we get together and have a family reunion.
What kind of turnout did you have, Sheila?
We had about 120 cousins.
That's pretty good.
Because my mammy, my great-grandmother, was a midwife. She delivered most of the people in Barron County, Kentucky, and we heard stories from the aunts and uncles over the years about that. And my brother continued the legacy of the family reunion every year, and he brings us all together. We just have a great time. And as far as music, I'm a singer-songwriter, and my family had a bunch of musicians, and we all pick and grin after we eat a potluck dinner.
Sheila, it sounds like a really great time, and I appreciate your sharing it with us. I thank you for that. Let me get one more right here. Thank you, Sheila. Good luck to your family. Norwood, Massachusetts. Tony, you're on the air.
Oh, yes. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
My wife had an interesting reunion with her four sisters this July. She just found out, it leaked out, they're in their 50s, and their mother and father has passed away.
Okay.
But they just found out that they have a brother. And they don't know who it is. It happened 45 years ago. I guess their dad had a child out of wedlock. So it was kind of a shock after 45 years.
There's news. Now, he was not at the reunion, or he was? I guess not, Tony.
They don't even think they know that he's got four sisters.
How did they figure out that this brother existed if dad and mom are gone?
Well, the aunt knew about it, and I guess it was kind of kept a secret, but it was leaked out.
Wow.
And the dad's name is Bill Collins. I hope it's okay to say that. And they're looking for him somewhere in Massachusetts.
Hey, a long-lost brother who sounds as though would be welcome at the family reunion. Tony, you remind us there can be big surprises at family reunions. I appreciate your call, Tony.
Thank you for taking me.
Let me go to Lincoln, Nebraska right now. And Dawn Braithwaite. She is Chair of Communication Studies at University of Nebraska Lincoln, Senior Fellow with the Council on Contemporary Families. Dawn, thank you very much for joining us today.
My pleasure, Tom.
You bring a kind of anthropologist's eye almost to family reunions. How do you see what's going on when the extended family gets together?
Well, you know, family reunions are rituals. So in a broader sense, family reunions honor something that's sacred. And Ione talked about it honors history and identity and values of the family. And that can be a very positive experience and sometimes a bit of a mixed bag experience.
Where's the mixed bag come in? In our golden sort of glow of the way we like to look at it, it's pretty much upside.
Well, it largely is, hopefully, but you think about family reunions as highlighting contradictions in families, autonomy and connectedness. So you go to these and you think, oh, this is my family. And then you look around and think, who are these people? You know, am I really related to these people? And, you know, you have your family secrets and your embarrassing characters, openness and closedness. You know, you have to really think very carefully about the things that you're going to reveal to others and the things you want to hear about others and the things that you might not want to talk about. And so, you know, while it's a wonderful thing and reunions can be great, there's always a bit of a complexity to rituals as well.
And of course, over generations, family can take on different kinds of complexions and layers. We heard in a song we played earlier, the kids singing about, you know, family reunions, some poor as church mice, some may be rich. I mean, you can end up in very different places, not just geographically, when you get across many layers of family.
Right. And so you have to cope with those differences. I have a funny story from my husband's own family when I first married into the family and we were going to a family reunion. And my husband said, now, you know, this family's pretty wild. And he remembered going as a child and the adults, his parents' generation, were doing cartwheels and standing on their heads, largely because they were drinking a lot. And so we brought Coke and Diet Coke with us to the reunion. And when we got there, our generation was actually quite modest. Teetotalers, if you will. Mm-hmm. And so they all of those parents didn't live very long. The next generation down was saying, well, gee, this reunion's kind of boring. We were hoping people were going to stand on their heads and turn cartwheels. You know, and so you see that way that it knits together past, present, and future, but also that it shows that families really do have some complexities to them.
Of course, by the time, Edith, that you get out to second and third cousins, you've got lots of families intersecting here. I mean, one person might have several options of family reunions to attend, which could be very different in their nature, very different, well, literally different families. I mean, we all have are at the intersection of many families, Edith.
Oh, absolutely. And it's no different than, you know, when you marry into a family and you have to learn what, you know, what that family is like. And it definitely, as people move out and live in different places, they are going to change some. But I think that that's part of that when Ione talks about the diversity at the reunion, that's part of, you know, the diversity that comes in where people live in different parts of the country. They live very differently. And that's also the beauty of what the cousins, for example, as they reacquaint themselves with one another, what they learn about themselves and, you know, about their family members.
I mean, Dawn, when my Swedish family would get together, when Uncle Otto, my grandfather's brother, he was the one who had gone far. You know, he'd gone out to Washington State to become a forest ranger. When he would come home, then there would always be a family reunion. And all the that generation, Ivar and Otto and Hulda and Yarda and Olga, everybody would be there. It was a big deal. The thing that stands out in my mind from that was, for whatever reason, it was always my grandfather who would give the prayer. And it was always, in his case, spontaneous, everybody really paying attention. And the amount of culture and perspective on life and the world that was transmitted in that prayer. It was kind of freewheeling. It would go on for a while. But there was so much culture and perspective embedded in it. I just remember as a kid, it felt like I was mainlining family juice of some kind when my grandfather, Ivar, would deliver that prayer. There was a moment of transference of some kind.
Absolutely. I mean, rituals and family reunions in particular are very powerful that way. They help us understand who we are. And the older generation, you know, often does want to transmit that to the younger generation and send a message about who we are collectively. And as you mentioned, this also had to do with ethnic culture. So you thought about yourself as who we are in America, who we are in our roots. Mm-hmm. And Ione talked about that with African-American families a little bit. That's a very important function of this particular ritual.
Let's go to Chuck in Monroe, Wisconsin. Chuck, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I love talking about family reunions because our family's been doing that for decades now, and we've kind of hit a sweet spot that we get together for a week every third year, and we elect a committee, and the committee plans the reunion. They spend about $6,000 hosting. And meals are provided. There's entertainment. We get together for a young versus old softball game. The list goes on and on, but it's really cool how we fund this because everyone makes something to bring to an auction. And we have an auction that raises the money to host these. So it's, if you've got your favorite aunt's knitted a doily, and you want to spend $60 on it, go for it, because that $60 is going to be turned around and spent back on you and your family during the reunion.
What a great thing. It also shows off talents right there. If your great aunt can knit a fine doily, she gets to not only put it up for auction and raise some money, but share a skill.
Absolutely. And the variety of things that people come up with, I have a cousin in Montana, and he said, come on out and hunt anything you want. I'll saddle up the horses. We'll go up into the mountains. If you guys just want to watch birds, we'll go bird watching for a week. Well, terrific idea. You get to bond with that cousin as well.
Chuck, it's
neat stuff.
It sounds great, and I appreciate your call. There's so many varieties and so many flavors of family. You know, I missed a family reunion this summer. I had to make choices between one thing and another. But earlier this month, it was in Champaign, Illinois, the great Brzee family there. My dad and sister carried the flag for our wing of the family. Big gathering there, Dawn, Edith, tremendous. One of these just amazing things happened, though. During the reunion, on the kind of ultimate day, the great sort of paterfamilias, the big pillar of the family, nearly 90 years old, actually died during the reunion. He had a stroke and was at the hospital. And
oh, my goodness.
Off he went.
Wow.
And the whole family holding hands in a big circle there and praying and sending him off with their love. My father called and said, I mean, it was shocking, but at the same time, he was in his late 80s. My father said, that is the way I want to go. Can you
me too.
Organize a family reunion to send me off to glory? And
he
was pretty thrilled about
it. And he
that.
Probably had said sometime before that, I hope I live to see the family reunion.
He had actually written a charge to the family, you know, which is often part of a religious service there, which had been read to the family before in fact, he went to meet his maker. Wonderful. A wonderful and kind of profound, more than profound day in a family's life, but to experience it all together, I guess reunion made that one possible.
Yes.
Yeah, and that's that creating of the family future. So we're here together in the present, remembering the past, but we're also setting ourselves into the future. So an event like that will never be forgotten, and that'll be a big part of who the family becomes.
It will not be forgotten. No question about that.
Yeah.
Dawn Braithwaite in Lincoln, Nebraska. It's been great to have you with us today, Dawn. Thank you so much for joining us from the Council on Contemporary Families there.
You are most welcome.
And Edith Wagner, editor of Reunions Magazine, joining us from Milwaukee. Edith, thank you so much for your insights today.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Listeners, thank you for all your family reunion stories and your time today. Wonderful to have you with us. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
The next time we see each other, maybe years and years.